Thank you very much, Birashus, Harafink Shlita, Rav Axelrod Shlita, my dear friend Daniel Bloom. Thank you so much for organizing this, and Birashus, the Neuwirth family. It was really a very special treat to get to meet your father, because I had heard about him beforehand, and his special kind of avas haTorah, his special passion for spreading Torah, for disseminating Torah, and it was a really beautiful geshmak geshmuz that we had for a few moments, and it's something that that I cherish, and all of the lessons that he taught you and that he taught this entire community, as Rabbi Fink so beautifully said before, should be able to live on for a very, very long time and really make an impact. And you can sense, you feel it in the room, that that the loss is so strongly felt. Now, we are here, in a certain sense, celebrating. We're celebrating the completion of Maseches Sota, and I do believe in the Masifta Derukia. They got to learn Daf Yomi, right? They have to learn Daf Yomi in the Masifta Derukia. So I'm sure Be'iyun, though. They have time to learn Be'iyun. So we're celebrating a Siyum on Maseches Sota, which is, and it's right before Shavuos. And that's what we call a Daf Yomi coincidence. And it's a Daf Yomi coincidence for two reasons. First reason is that there are 49 blot in Maseches Sota, and 48, but it goes to Memtes, so we'll call it 49, and many people have the custom that they learn Maseches Sota each year during this tkufa, during this period of Sfira, one daf a day for the entire Sfira, and it prepares you for the Yom Tov Shavuos. Between, there are a couple of Masechtas that are 49 blot, but many people have such a practice. But second, and much more relevant for tonight, there are many topics within Maseches Sota that serve as an excellent introduction to the Chag of Kabbalah HaTorah, to the Yom Tov of Kabbalah HaTorah, to the Yom Tov of Shavuos. And one topic that I kept noticing coming up throughout the Masechta is the topic that Rabbi Fink spoke about a little bit, and that is the Midah of Anivus. The idea of humility comes up so many times throughout the Masechta. Now, that is an extraordinary preparation for Kabbalah HaTorah, because Chazal tell us in numerous places that both in terms of acquiring Torah knowledge as well as maintaining Torah knowledge, it is the most important midah. Meaning, if a person wants to become a Talmud Chacham, wants to become a Gadol B'Yisrael, then the greatest midah that he can achieve is anivus, and that will prepare him better than anything else. It is, of course, no accident that the person who gave us the Torah, who brought it down from Har Sinai, was Moshe Rabbeinu, was Anav Mikol Adam. It is no accident that the person who wrote our text of Torah Sh'bal Peh, who wrote the Mishnayos, was Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, who was also Mishameis Rebbe, Batla Anava, as Rabbi Fink said before, a symbol of anivus. And the Gemara in Taimis of Zion tells us, Amr Rabbi Chanina Baridi, Lama Nimshlu Divrei Torah L'mayim, why is Torah compared to water? And the Gemara explains, Ma Mayim Manichin Makom Gavah V'Hochin Makom Namuch, just like water always goes to the lowest place, it's the nature of water. If you ever had a leak in your house and you saw that the water was coming in at a specific spot, you could rest assured that the hole in the roof is probably not over that spot where the water is coming in. It might be the other end of the house, but the water always finds the lowest place, and that's where it's going to leak through. That just like water finds the lowest place, Torah also always finds the person who is most low in the sense of the way he carries himself, the way he thinks about himself. Af divrei Torah in the sky min al b'misha daito shvala. And then the Gemara goes on in Maseches Tainus and tells us that it's not only about achieving Torah, but it's about holding on to Torah. A person also needs that sense of anivus. The Gemara tells us, Amar Rav Hoshaya, Lama nimshulu divrei Torah l'shlosha mashkin alalu, b'mayim, b'yayin, u'b'chalav. Torah is not only compared to water, it's also compared to wine, it's also compared to milk. And the Gemara tells us, why? Mashlosha mashkin alalu, ein meskaimin ela b'pacho shebekelin. If you want to keep your milk fresh, if you want to keep your wine tasty, and even the water, if you don't want it to have a little bit of a rancid taste, you keep it in the cheapest of kelim. You keep it in a plastic Poland Spring water bottle. You keep it in something that's not, that doesn't give it some sort. You don't keep it in silver. You don't keep it in gold, because that's going to ruin the taste of it. Sa'af divrei Torah. So too when it comes to divrei Torah, in the skyman, if you want to maintain that Torah, if you want to keep that Torah, if you want to hold on to that Torah, there's no greater skula than to be an anav. And then the Gemara goes on to tell the famous anecdote about how unimpressed the Kesar's daughter was with the physical appearance of Rabbi Yishuv ben Chananya, and how he taught her a lesson by advising, why don't you try storing your fine wine in silver kelim, and that obviously didn't go well for her, and he was teaching her that lesson, that Torah only stays in the pachos shebekelim. The Gemara in Erevin goes even further, and says that this very midah is the basis for the choice of venue for Matan Torah. You know, we think about Matan Torah, we think about Kolos Uvrakim, the experience of Matan Torah, the awesomeness of Matan Torah. We hopefully also think about the content of Matan Torah, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, what the Torah actually was. But we also are told by Chazal to think about the venue for Matan Torah. And the venue was Har Sinai, and it was also in the middle of a midbar. So the Gemara says, why? Why? Hashem could have given us the Torah anywhere. He could have brought us to the most beautiful place on earth and given us the Torah. Why in a midbar? A midbar is not beautiful at all. And the Gemara explains, because that if a person in Mesim Adam Atzmo Kamid Barzeh Shakol Dashenbo, if a person allows himself to be trampled on by other people, he doesn't hold himself with a sense of great kavod, with a sense of expecting kavod from other people, then Talmud Miskay Biyado, then the person will be a Talmud Chacham. So what I want to do with you tonight is two parts. First part is, it will be a little more enjoyable for those who actually did Daf Yomi, which is fair, right? It's a Sivam Masechta Sota, so we should do something for the Daf Yomi people. So the first part, I just want to go through the Masechta and show you where I saw that there's so much anivus in Masechta Sota, that the message comes up. I mean, I don't know this Masechta backwards and forwards, and as I was going through it, I was not taking notes. But I tried from Masechta Sota to do the Zichru program, to remember like a little bit of something. So this morning, I just like tried to run through it in my head. I found 16 places where explicitly, where Anivus is expressed explicitly in Masechta Sota. You can make a million other drashas where it's implicit, but explicitly in 16 different places in Masechta Sota. So we'll do a quick review of the Masechta in the first half. And then the second half, I would like to share with you perhaps three messages relating to Anivus that also emerged from Masechta Sota, one in the area of Ben Adam L'Chavero, one in the area of Ben Adam L'Makom, and one in the area of Ben Adam L'Atzmo, in the interpersonal realm, in between us and God, and in between developing ourselves and our midos. And hopefully we'll try to do that in a timely fashion. But let's do the quick run-through of Masechta Sota. Where do we find the midah of Anivus? So the first major sugya that relates to Anivus starts in Daf Dalet Amud Beis, and the Gemara tells us that someone who is arrogant, someone who expresses the opposite to the midah of anivus, it's as if he was Ovid Avodah Zarah. It's as if he was kofer be'ikr. It's as if he was boel arayos. It's as if he built a bama. It's all of these horrible things, which are the worst of the averos. If there was a midah equivalent of a maisa avera, it's the midah equivalent of the very worst maisa averas you can think of Avodah Zarah, of Kofar Be'ikr, is a person who has a sense of gaiva. Then on Daf Hei, the Gemara identifies the precise pasuk that gives us an azhara legasus haruach, and tells us that kol adam sheyeshbo gasus haruach, anyone who has a sense of arrogance, l'sof mismait, he's going to be lowered down. It's not going to work out for him. Person thinks they're going to lift themselves up by acting in an arrogant way, they're going to be lowered right down. And then the Gemara tells us, but it's always possible to do tshuva from that. A person is able to improve themselves. Third, on Daf Hei, the Gemara tells us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu iniach kol harim u'gvoos v'ishru shchinasu al har Sinai v'lo gava har Sinai l'mayla. Probably the most famous Gemara in Masechta Sota, the most famous Gemara, probably one that every child learns in preschool. Why did Hashem choose Har Sinai? Weren't there more impressive mountains than Hashem? Har Tabor, Mount Everest, I don't know, aren't there more impressive? Yes, but that's exactly why Hashem chose Har Sinai, because Har Sinai was so humble. That's a Gemara in Sota Daf Hei. Further on in Daf Hei, the Gemara tells us several terrible things about Gasei HaRuach. A Gas HaRuach deserves to be chopped down like an Asherah tree. The dirt of his kever is not going to budge at Tchias HaMesim of a Gas HaRuach, of a person who is a Baal Gaiva. What does it mean the dirt won't budge at Tchias HaMesim? It means he's not going to experience Tchias HaMesim. The Shechina is miyaleles alav, groans and laments such a person. Hashem says, I cannot exist together in the world with a person who has Gasus HaRuach. A tiny wind will blow him over. And the Gemara goes on to say, L'sof Nivchas, he will always shrink in the end of the day. A fifth place, the Gemara later on Daf Hei, a lot of them are on Daf Hei, goes on to say that Amrav Talmud Chacham Tzarek Sheyebo Echad Mishmona Bishminis. That a Talmud Chacham at least needs to have an eighth of a measure of arrogance. Not like 50-50 like with most Midos, an eighth of a measure of arrogance. And you would think, okay, that's a very tiny amount of arrogance. But there's another opinion in the Gemara, Lomina Velomiktsasa. Absolutely not. Not even a little bit. There should be zero. There should be no arrogance whatsoever. Further on Daf Hei, the Gemara says that if a person is humble, it's ki'ilu hikriv kala karbanos kulam, as if he brought every karban that exists. On Daf Zayin, the Gemara says that when we give a Musar Shmuz, a pep talk to the Sota, we're trying to convince the Sota that she sinned and she should admit her wrongdoing. So we say, think about heroes in Jewish history who admitted their wrongdoing and they didn't lose anything for doing that. Yehuda, Reuven admitted their wrongdoing and they are heroes of Jewish history. And that takes a certain amount of anivus to be able to admit one's wrongdoing. On Daf Tes, we talk about how arrogant Avshalom was about his hair, and Mida Keneged Mida, he got killed through his hair because he took such great pride in his hair. You find one Jewish guy that can grow a nice head of hair, and he decided that he's going to take full advantage, and then ultimately that was his undoing. On Daf Yud Zayin, we learn that Bizchus of Avram Avinu saying Anochi Afar the Efer, because Avram Avinu expressed that he felt like Afar the Efer. We're zochet to have two great mitzvos. Afar Sota, Efer Para Aduma. On Daf Chaf Beis, we learn that the Mevale Olam, those who are destructive forces in the world, are people who walk around with their head down, pretending to be humble when it's false humility, when it's really arrogance. They're looking for attention. They want people to notice their humility. They want to be tsenua in a noticeable way, in a head-turning kind of way. They want everyone to notice their humility. That's Mevale Olam. That's the worst. Where am I now? Daf Lamed Beis, the Gemara tells us. Tanya, Rav Shimon Chai Omer, Adam Omer Shivcha b'kol namuch u'gnuso b'kol ram. If a person has something nice to say about themselves, say it very quietly, not for others to hear. If you want to speak something negative, something, and the Gemara later clarifies to me, not negative, you shouldn't go around bad-mouthing yourself either, but it means if a person has needs, if a person is struggling with something and they need tefillos, so they should say that b'kol ram. They should let everybody know that they need tefillos. The zechus of tefillos is very great, but never your shevach b'kol ram. One should never go around tooting their own horn, says the Gemara on Daf Lamed Beis. On Daf Lamed Hey, I'm almost done here. On Daf Lamed Hey, we're at least with the first part. We're told that Uzo was punished because he tried to catch the Aron as it was falling off, and he should have realized that the Aron is no seyas nosav, that it carries those who carry it. You think you're going to lift the Aron? The Aron lifts you. You don't lift the Aron. On Daf Lamed Tes, they asked Reb Lozer ben Shemua in what merit he had Arichus Yamim. It's a question that comes up a lot in Shas. When someone lives a very long time, they ask him, why did you live so long? To me, what was always surprising about that question is the assumption is that the person who's being asked knows the answer, right? That he knows why he lives so long. Meaning, most of the time, we just assume, I don't know, Hashem decided to give X number of years to some people and Y number of years to other people. It's an interesting thing that they assume that he... I remember there used to be a comedian, George Burns. You can see how old people are if they remember or not. So there used to be a comedian, he lived to like the age of like 99 or something. And they asked him, how did you live so long? They asked him, like, they asked Reb Lozer ben Shemua, Lahavdil, they asked George Burns, how did you live so long? And he said, I smoked a cigar every day. So he's an idiot. What are you talking about? He smoked a cigar. That's not why you live so long. That doesn't... But Reb Lozer ben Shemua knew why he lived so long. He understood why he lived so long. What did he say? Why did I live so long? Among his answers, he had three answers, but among them is, Lo Pasati al Rashi Yam Kodesh. I never stepped over other people. When I needed to get someone, it was never at someone else's expense. I never stepped over the heads of other people, acted with arrogance toward others. On Daf Mem, the Gemara says that Rabbi Avo used to think he was humble. Rabbi Fink mentioned before the famous line of Rabbi Yosef, that Lo Tisni Anava Di Ika Ana. What do you mean that Anivas died? I'm still here. We actually have nine blood earlier in the Masechta, someone else who also claims the mantle of Anivas for themselves, which is like such a surprising thing, as Rabbi Fink noted, that you're going to say, I'm humble. Rabbi Avo said, you know, I used to think I was the most humble guy around, but then I met someone else, Rabbi Abba Dimin Akko, who is even more humble than I. Rabbi Abba Dimin Akko didn't mind when his Meturgumam gave different explanations than he was giving in the Shir, and the Gemara, when it illustrates the humility of Rabbi Avo, it says Rabbi Avo's wife was talking to the wife of his assistant. His assistant, they used to not have microphones, so they had human microphones. So the Rebbe would speak quietly, and they would have someone with a booming voice. You know, nowadays the rabbi has to have a booming voice because we keep Shabbos and we can't have microphone Shabbos. But, you know, it used to be that the rabbi could speak very, very low, and someone else with a booming voice would just, you know, belt it out to everybody else. So the guy, the wife of the guy who would belt it out for Rabbi Avo, was telling Rabbi Avo, Rabbi Avo's wife was telling Mrs. Avo that you should know, my husband doesn't really need your husband. He knows how to say Gantz good. He knows how to say better shir than your husband does. And he just gives him the respect of listening to him. So Mrs. Avohu was so insulted. She said, standing up for the dignity of her husband, she said to Rabbi Avohu, well, you know what they're saying about you? You know what your assistant thinks of you? And Rabbi Avohu says, what do I care? My nafkalachmina, why does it make a difference? From my shir, Kiddush Hashem comes out. Good, who cares whether the Kiddush Hashem comes from me or comes from the other person? The anivos of Rabbi Avohu. Two more examples. Daf Mem Zayin, the Gemara says, Hayman Dimiyaher Afilu Inshi Beisei Lo Mikbo. If a person acts with arrogance, he thinks he's going to impress his family, his wife, his children, they will not be impressed. It's clarified that that it's possible that at first they will be, but then they'll see right through it. And then they're going to realize that the arrogance, it's all empty. And then the final example is the Gemara that Rav Fink Shlita read just a moment ago, that Rebbe, that Mishameis Rebbe, Batla Anava, V'yiras Chet, and Rav Yosef comments, Al Tisni Anava, Di'ika Ana. So I made my case, right? The Gemara in Sota talks a lot about anivus, and those are all direct. Those aren't like hints. It's not like, oh, if you look at it sideways and you darshan it this way, it's like pretty straight out. A lot about the mitzvah of anava. So considering all this talk about the value of anivus, I would like to share with you three ideas that hopefully we can all take home relating to the most critical of all mitzvos. The period of time of Sfiras HaOmer leading up to the Yom Tov of Shavuos is universally understood as a period of time of self-assessment, of self-improvement. You know, the Memches Kinyanei Torah are associated with this period of time because we're supposed to think about how to improve ourselves, how to build ourselves up. That's built into the DNA of Klal Yisrael. The initial 50-day period between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kabbalah HaTorah was going from Memtesh Shari Tumah to be able to arrive at a state of Kabbalah HaTorah. So built into our DNA that this time period of the year is a time of growth. It's a time where we can improve. So I would like to make three suggestions that hopefully we can take home with us. One relating to Anivus in the Ben Adam L'Chavero realm. One relating to Anivus in the Ben Adam L'Makom realm. And one relating to Anivus in the Ben Adam L'Atzmo realm. First, as far as Ben Adam L'Chavero is concerned, our humility message of Ben Adam L'Chavero emerges from another sugya in Masechta Sota. The Gemaras in Sota Daf Lamed Dalid Lamed Hey discuss the episode of the Meraglim, the tragic, tragic episode of the Meraglim. And the Psukim quoted in Daf Lamed Dalid and Beis tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu gave Yehoshua a bracha for success. He changed his name from Hoshea to Yehoshua, Ko Yoshiacha Me'atzas Meraglim. The Ksav Sofer on Parsha Shalach writes that the tefillah was not simply that Yeshua shouldn't speak Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael like the rest of them. Right? That certainly is terrible to speak Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael, and let's be mindful of the fact that tonight is Yom Yerushalayim. Tonight is a time that also is built in toward appreciating Eretz Yisrael, toward appreciating Kedusha, appreciating the Kedusha of Yerushalayim and the access that we have toward that Kedusha, while still recognizing that that access and that Kedusha is not complete, kol zman, that we don't have have a Beis HaMikdash. But one might think that if Moshe Rabbeinu is blessing Yehoshua, he's just telling him, yeah, you shouldn't speak Lashon Hara like the rest of these guys. But says the Ksav Sofer, no, why would he only give that bracha to Yehoshua and not to everybody else? Doesn't he want none of them to speak Lashon Hara? And also, Yehoshua's a Baal Bechira. He gets to choose whether he does a mitzvah or doesn't do a mitzvah. What do you mean that he shouldn't speak Lashon Hara? You know, there are certain things you just can't give a bracha for. When Rav Shechter Shlita met the Stipler, he told us he asked for a bracha for Hatzlacha in learning. And the Stipler Zatzal said to him, no, I'm not giving you a bracha for Hatzlacha in learning. Because brachas don't help for Hatzlacha in learning. Amelus helps for Hatzlacha in learning. Hasmada helps for Hatzlacha in learning. So if you have Amelus, you have Hasmada, then you'll have Hatzlacha in learning. If you work hard and you're diligent, you'll have success in learning. When a young man once asked Rav Scheinberg, Zichrono Livracha, for a bracha to find a shidduch, he was having trouble finding a shidduch. So the young man went to Rav Scheinberg, and Rav Scheinberg said, no, you don't need a bracha. You need a haircut, a shirt without a stain on it, and a decent tie. That's what you need to find a shidduch. I mean, there are some areas where a bracha helps, and some areas where a bracha does not help. Says the Ksav Sofer, the meaning of this bracha of Kol Yoshiacha was that the goal of the Meraglim was to prevent the entry into Eretz Yisrael. And we already learned from Eldar Umeida that when the Jewish people go into Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu is not going with them, it's going to be Yoshua's rise to power. Yoshua is going to be the Melech when we go into Eretz Yisrael. We learn all of the dinim of Mori B'Malchus, that you're not allowed to rebel against the king, from how God commands the Jewish people to treat Yehoshua. He had a din of a melech when we go into Eretz Yisrael. Ksav Sofer writes, the prayer of Kayosh Yacha Me'artzis Meraglim is Moshe Rabbeinu's davening, Yehoshua, Hashem should save you from their Eitzah, not that you shouldn't speak Lashon Hara, that you'll do on your own. You'll be a tzaddik or you won't be a tzaddik, that's going to be your own choice. Hashem should save your malchus. He should save your ability to become the leader of the Jewish people, because kol zman that we don't go into Eretz Yisrael, you will not be the leader of the Jewish people. You're only going to become a melech when we actually enter into Eretz Yisrael. Moshe davened that would be true for Yehoshua. And the Ksav Sofer writes that would have actually saved both Yehoshua and Kalev from going along with the plan of the Meraglim was their humility. The Meraglim, says the Ksav Sofer, were immediately suspicious that there was something wrong with the land. The Ksav Sofer says, why? Because these were all very chashuva people. These were all very important people. You want to send people to just scout something out, so send some people who have some military expertise. You're going to send the biggest tzaddikin? So the Meraglim, when they were sent on this mission, all looked at themselves and they said, if he's sending us, he's sending the big guns. He's sending the biggest tzaddikin. Then there must be something very wrong that he's very nervous about, if we're the ones that are being chosen to be sent. Yehoshua and Kalev did not have that attitude. They didn't think of themselves as so different, as so much bigger. So they never had that kasha. And therefore, they never needed to think about Eretz Yisrael in that way. It was their anivus that saved them. But how does a humble person teach values to his or her children? Meaning, a humble person will go around not tooting their own horn, not sharing their own successes and their own milos. The Gemara says, you're supposed to keep your milos quiet. If you're always saying that you're a nobody and nothing, the kids might believe you, and they might not listen to anything that you say. So the answer is found in this episode of the Meraglim, and this is the Bein Adam L'Chaveru message. We can use the very trick that Kalev used. When trying to highlight the truth of Moshe Rabbeinu's hopes for the people to go into Eretz Yisrael, Kalev didn't leave it to Moshe himself to sing his own praises and to defend himself. Instead, Kalev got up, and as the Gemara elaborates so beautifully for us in Masechta Sota, spoke about what Moshe Rabbeinu had done for them. Ekev hoisa ruach echeris imo, says the Ksav Sofer, means that he didn't have a ruach gavoa kamoham. Kalev had no problem singing the praises of another person, singing the praises of Moshe Rabbeinu. The other Meraglim couldn't do that. What was extraordinary about Kalev's humility is that it led him to speak about the accomplishments and the greatness of somebody else, not feeling threatened by the prospect of being viewed as second rate. And in our own homes, we can employ the same trick. We can help our children understand the greatness of our spouses. Maybe they can't talk about how great they are. We can talk about how great they are. I can talk all day long, all day and all night, how great my wife is. And we could do that. When we fulfill the Rambam's demand for a husband to be mechabedo yoser migufo, we can show our children that their mother is a queen and yet never acts like one. And that can be the source of profound inspiration. We can each highlight the great qualities, whether it be of our spouses or of anybody else, use our voices to build people up. When Rav Rimon came to my shul, Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon came to my shul a number of months ago, we had a public question-answer session, and one of the questions that I asked him, where I said people could submit questions, but you know I rigged it. So one of the questions that I asked him was that if you had like one particular hakpada in halacha, one thing that people should be a little more careful in halacha, that's easy to do, but people just don't think of, what would it be? And he had such an unbelievable answer. He said that you can give compliments to other people. It's a mitzvah, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, when you give compliments to other people. And it's so easy. Just compliment, if you're married, compliment your spouse. If you have children, compliment your children. If you have anybody, if you have friends, compliment them. It's so easy, each and every day, to just speak nicely about somebody else, to build somebody else up. That is the lesson, Beinad Mechaveru. A humble person is busy praising other people. Second, we have a humility lesson that focuses on Beinad Lemakom. Back on Daf Lamed, we learned about how Klal Yisrael sang Shira, three opinions in the Gemara about how they did it responsively. Was it that they repeated every word, like a Katan Amakre Sahalo? Did they only repeat the chorus? Did they finish off the sentences that Moshe Rabbeinu started at Az Yashir? But it seems that the very notion of Shira is something that's more than just an expression of Simcha. There's no Chi of Shira, for example, on Yom Tov, on Shabbos. We didn't sing Shira when the man fell, even though that was a remarkable and constant miracle. What causes Shira? Like in Lamdish terminology, what's the mechayev of Shira? So perhaps Shira by definition is an act of humility. Complaining is an act of arrogance, because behind every complaint is the implicit statement that I deserve better. Behind every Shira, every statement of gratitude is the implicit statement that I don't really deserve all of this. I don't deserve all of this goodness that's been given to me. A humble person feels so unworthy of God's kindness that he bursts with positive emotion when something good happens. A Baal Gaiva feels so entitled that he complains when he doesn't get his way. It therefore makes the most sense to sing Shira at Kriyas Yamsuf, because the message of Kriyas Yamsuf itself is a message of humility. Rav Baruch Simon Shlita points out that the message of Kriyas Yamsuf was an anti-gaiva message. Ashir la Hashem ki ga'o ga'a is a celebration of God showing his might in putting down the gaiva of Paro. The Archaim HaKadosh explains that the gaiva of Paro was a double gaiva. Ki ga'o ga'a. Most Balei Gaiva act arrogantly to their equals, to other people. Paro acted arrogantly toward God himself. Rabbi Simon, as he's wont to do in his Sefer Imrei Baruch, quotes one of his Talmidim, a dear friend of mine, Moshe Grishko, who pointed out that the Shiras Miriam, which represents the Tamtzis HaDvarim of the Az Yashir, if you could narrow down Az Yashir into like what the main point of Az Yashir is, we don't have to do that because they already did that. The Shira that Miriam sang was the Cliff's Notes of the Az Yashir. Was here's the point, here's the bottom line of the Az Yashir. And what is that Shira? Miriam, Shira la Hashem ki ga'o ga'a, a celebration of gaiva losing. So if a person doesn't feel that Hashem owes him anything, he doesn't feel entitled to anything. And that's a healthy relationship to have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that expresses itself in Shira when Hashem provides us with blessings. And this is a lesson Beinad L'Makom. A person who doesn't feel that Hashem owes him anything will appreciate all that Hashem gives him and will be constantly overflowing with gratitude for his blessings. And the third and final lesson, Benadam La'atzmo. Benadam La'atzmo means that a person builds their own character. It may not affect another person directly. That would be Benadam La'chavero. It may not even be direct service of God. But it's maximizing our Tzelem Elokim, maximizing our own capacities to be better, to be good people. The Gemara, as we noted, says that having humility is as good as bringing all the karbanos in the world. And that message is alluded to in the very first word of Sefer Vayikra. Sefer Vayikra is the Sefer about all the Karbanos. And the very first word of Sefer Vayikra has something funny in the Sefer Torah, that the Aleph is a tiny Aleph. And the Baal HaTurim writes that the Aleph is a small Aleph to symbolize Moshe Rabbeinu's humility. When one thinks about why the Torah specifically highlights Moshe's humility at the beginning of Vayikra, something fascinating emerges. Humility can be expressed and demonstrated in three different contexts. When someone speaks to his parents, his Rebbe, his boss, other superiors, his wife, he may speak with humility, but that's to be expected. He's speaking to people who are assumed to be on a higher level than him. He has no choice but to speak with humility. Somebody who behaves that way is simply following social protocol. Expected, good, right, but nothing special. In fact, if he didn't speak that way, something would be off. Right, if the person is a little too chummy with the boss, right? If I don't know, at the king's coronation, Rabbi Mervis would go for a fist bump, you know, on the king. Right, something would be a little bit off. Failure to do so would be considered insubordination and wholly inappropriate. Another context that people often express humility is in their interactions with their students, with their children, with their employees, with subordinates, husbands. Such humility is a bit more impressive because you're dealing with people who you have no reason to humble yourself in front of. And that's certainly not a social norm, and it's not expected, but it's also kind of easy because it's not that difficult to act humbly when dealing with subordinates because it's assumed that there's a certain reverence in the relationship, and it's therefore not a risk to your reputation when you act humbly. To the contrary, the likelihood is that they'll respect you even more for it. So in a certain sense, it's very self-serving. The most impressive interaction, if done with humility, is the interaction among equals, competitors. People have a tendency to try to one-up each other in the most odd of circumstances. Right? Sometimes even like at a shiva house, oh, you think what you're suffering is bad. You should know what happened to my cousin. Like people do, like, I don't know why people do things like this, but people sometimes, you know, it's very often the natural first response. Someone says, let's take something a little less intense. Someone says, I have a headache. Oh, I have the biggest headache also. I'm tired. Oh, I barely slept last night. Just let the person be tired. You don't have to tell them how tired you are. You don't have to outdo it every single time. You know, like I tell Hassanim, you know, if your wife says she's tired, don't try to tell her how tired you are. Say, I must be so rough that you have to go through your day so tired. She'll appreciate that a lot more than if you tell her how tired you are. Now she should have rachmanos on you. People have a tendency to try and one-up each other. If a coworker tells you of a professional accomplishment, you instinctively want to respond with your own professional accomplishment because your equal can be perceived as a threat. There are times that you're afraid to lower yourself too much. Doing so might be construed as acknowledgement that you're inferior to somebody who should be your equal. And the next time somebody's up for a promotion, you might lose. There's a phenomenon in the world called a humble brag, which involves a person wanting to sound humble while simultaneously trying to draw attention to their accomplishments. You know, I can't believe that everybody thinks I'm so handsome. I really think I'm just average looking. The idea is that people want to observe their social convention of humility, but don't want it to affect their reputation in any way. A truly humble person does not think about himself at all when acting humbly. That's what humility means. And even if it harms his reputation, he will continue to shun the spotlight. So Moshe Rabbeinu had just completed the fundraising and overseeing the construction project in all of its painstaking detail of the Mishkan, of God's house. And now it's time for the Mishkan to be up and running with Karbanos, and Moshe steps aside to allow Aaron to take over, because Aaron was the CEO of the Mishkan, Moshe was not. And that was a great act of graciousness on behalf of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it's amplified by the fact that Chazal tell us that he stayed in the Yoel Moed as a way of completely stepping out of the spotlight. Amad lo min atzad, Chazal say. Amad HaKadosh Baruch Hu ad masay ata mashpil atzmecha. Why are you lowering yourself so much? Rashi teaches us Aaron and Moshe are sometimes listed with Aaron first and sometimes with Moshe first because they are equals. The greatness of Moshe's humility is best expressed in a context that comes between equals. So our final message of humility, the message of Ben Adam La'atzma. is every once in a while to think about whether there is any self-interest in our behavior at all. Are we being nice and kind and generous and humble so that people can say that we're nice and kind and generous and humble? Or are we doing it because it is essentially good? So we have a week left to Kabbalah Satorah. We just finished a Masechta that I brought you 16 rayas, that this Masechta highlights the single most important midah that's necessary to receive the Torah properly. Wouldn't it be amazing if for the next week, each of us can be makabel, to work on our humility in all three areas. In Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, make sure each day over the next week to give a compliment to somebody, preferably your spouse if you're married, but a compliment each and every day. It's an easy one, you just have to remember to do it. In Bein Adam L'Makom, take a second during Shmona Esrei. You're saying the words anyway, right? During Modin, we're expressing our gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and thank Hashem for something that we don't feel entitled to. To have that moment of Kavana during Modin where we say, you know what, I don't deserve all this and I'm so grateful that I have it anyway. I started the practice this past Rosh Hashanah that when I say the words, I heard from Rabbi Yisrael Reisman that to try to take three words of Shmona Esrei each year and make them and own those three words, make them yours. He said, people say to him, it's going to take you forever to like have Kavanah in the whole Shmona Esrei if you're only taking 3 words a year. He said, yeah, I'm hoping it's the school for Arichas Yamim. You know, Hashem will decide how long I live, right? So for me this year, it was Erev Vavoker V'Tzaharayim. During Modin, I live my life personally in three different contexts. Erev is when I'm at home, except for right now. Boker is when I'm in my shul. Tzaharayim is when I'm in the yeshiva. I just think about it, how grateful and undeserving I am to have the brachos that I have in that context, and in that context. For 1 week, just to think about how full of gratitude we are for things that we don't deserve. And finally, in Bein Adam La'atzmo, to do something kind that nobody has to know about. Not for any credit, not for any enhancement of our own reputation. Not when anybody's looking. I actually have in my pocket now. I walked into shul this morning and I found an envelope on my shtender, and I knew I would, because a week before every yontif I find an envelope on my shtender. The only thing it says on it is Rabbi Leibowitz, and there's a note inside, please distribute this to people who need. And inside is always Gourmet Glot gift cards, a couple of $100 each. No name, no one signed it. There's someone that is doing something kind, not because he or she wants it to enhance their reputation. Because they will never, I mean, maybe they listen to these shiurim and they're like, oh, that's pretty good, but they will never be found out unless they fess up someday. Just to do something good because it is good. Bezos Hashem, we should do this. It should be a zechus for Steve's neshama, and it should be a zechus for all of us as we approach Kabbalah Satorah.